Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just... You're what? You changed up your thing. You're a who?
I did.
You're a judge?
I'm a judge.
A beauty queen judge?
I got second place, so they made me the judge.
A pig judge? Down at the county fair?
No, I am now a municipal judge.
A municipal judge?
Yeah.
In a municipality?
In a city.
In a city?
That's right. It's a part-time judge thing. A part-time judge gig.
A part-time judge gig? Are they just trying you out? Are you in there for like a test run?
No, it's a limited jurisdiction. It only deals with city issues, mainly traffic tickets, small city things, some zoning issues and things like that.
Oh.
And it's only a couple times a month, and that's it. So I'm still a practicing lawyer, but I'm also doing some judging now.
You are?
That's right.
You're moving on up.
I have not had a chance to say that dog don't hunt yet on the record, but
But you're going to be waiting for it.
It is coming.
It is. We're going to start recording those things.
It's my first step towards being a TV judge.
Well, I feel pretty good that we're passing on the ladder. You're going up while I'm going down. So, you know, that's what they say. You always pass those going up when you're going down.
I'm not
going
to lie. It was pretty cool when I first saw Judge Meadows written on a placard.
I guess so.
Yeah, it was kind of neat.
I could write that on a placard, Judge Smurl, but it wouldn't mean anything.
I think the wife and kids are getting a little tired of having to call me Judge Husband and Judge Dad. But,
yeah.
You know. They're getting used to it though.
Somebody will say, "Quit judging me." You'll say, "Why? That's my job."
Yeah, but that's the new thing we teased about coming up in 2020.
So, that's right. So when you have an argument at home and you're going to settle it, you can say sustained or overruled.
Well, I don't get to wear a black robe, but I do have a powdered wig that I wear. So there's that.
Oh well, good.
Yeah.
Well, so you're going to have to wear clothes if you don't have the black robe on, huh? You're not going to be like that one judge that was naked under his robe, huh?
No. No, that's frowned upon.
It's frowned upon.
So, yeah, I'm excited about that. It'll be fun.
Well, congratulations. We're proud of you.
Why, thank you.
From all of us here in court-appointed land, we're proud of you. You've done good.
Sustained.
That's what she said.
So, at Candle Nights... They had a special booth that you were a part of.
That's right. It was a special booth.
You're Thomas Booth. That's your middle name, by the way. Well, I know you know that, but maybe the listeners don't.
And Riley's.
And Riley's, yeah.
Yeah, she got stuck with it since I had no sons.
But Candle Nights was a good time.
Yeah, it was a real good time. It was a blast, like 2,500 people or something like that.
And oh, yeah.
It was packed and great, great audience. Everybody there it was so much fun, and we had Sawbones, and we did that Christmas thing, the Hallmark Christmas thing with Sawbones, mm-hmm. and then Wonderful performed, and Still Buffering performed, and then of course the boys of Mabim Bam brought up the anchor leg.
That's right. But before the show, you had a special booth, which was what I was alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
And you were firing people.
Yeah, they got the idea because they didn't do the clown box this year, so they were trying to figure out what to do to the clown box, so they asked me, would I go out there and fire people?
And that was because on their television show, it came out that you had fired Griffin before.
Right.
And I guess other people, but...
I've fired several in my career. Yeah, there were several there that night. But, I fired Griffin and launched him into, fame and fortune.
That's right, because he wanted to go to Bonnaroo.
Yeah, that's right. So I had to fire him. So that became part of one of the episodes there of their six-episode TV series. And so a bunch of people wanted to come and be like Griffin and get fired by me. And I really didn't think anybody would do it. I said, look, if you guys want me to do it, that's fine. I don't know what I'm going to say or what I'm going to do, but but I'll do it. So I took a Tri-Data box and opened it up.
You had a Tri-Data shirt on.
Yeah, wore my Tri-Data shirt, and then I put a sign up that said, "Get fired by Tommy Smurl for $5. And so people were coming up and throwing money in my box and saying, "Okay, fire me." And so I had to go through a different spiel with each one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just go say, "Put your money in the box, you're fired. Put your money in the box, you're fired." I mean, that's no fun. So I had to find something to make fun of them or insult them or something like that. People pay to get abused.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd verbally abuse them, you know. People come up and they would say, you know, and I'd say, "What can you do for our company?" And they, "Well, I'm going to try to work real hard." And I'd be like, try. "I don't need people that try. I need people that do. You're fired." You know, they'd leave. They'd say, "Can I take a picture? And you look real mean to me." I'd say, "Okay." So people did that. And I had one guy that came up and he gave me a resume.
Oh, really?
He actually had a resume. It was it has a plastic crawdad on it. And his name was John the Crawdaddy Quackenbush. And he has on there written, "For Tommy Smurl's eyes only."
Well, maybe you shouldn't read that then if it's for your eyes only.
Well, it's for my eyes only. It says, "If you are not Tommy Smurl," on the back it says this, "if you are not Tommy Smurl, at least be interested in hiring me or pass this resume on to him. Thanks." Cool. And so then he listed his working and down through there, trying to give me an idea of what he might do. And at the very end he said, "I know a lot about Garfield, the cat, and will get every reference you make and laugh. Thanks for reading. I love you. Please hire me. I'm poor." And he also was wearing a jacket that had crawdads all over it.
Really?
Yeah. So that was the Crawdaddy. John the Crawdaddy Quackenbush.
Probably had to fire him because he wouldn't show up on Mondays. Because he hates Mondays.
Yeah, if he's a Garfield fan.
And he'd always be late coming back from lunch because he'd be too busy eating lasagna.
That's right. Got to have that lasagna.
There's your Garfield references for you, Crawdaddy.
I had fun with all of them. One of them said, I said, "Well, what do you have any appreciable skills?" And one of them said, "Well, I'm graduated from college as a fashion designer." I said, "A fashion designer? You think I need one of those? Look at me. I just go to the closet and grab something khaki. I don't need a fashion designer."
As a fellow khaki wearer,
you're fired.
I appreciate that.
Now, the only one that hung me up, I mean, I kept coming up with different reasons. The only one that hung me up is I said, "Well, do you have any skills?" And the guy said, "Well, I graduated from college with a degree in special education, and I'm teaching mentally handicapped people how to live a productive life."
You're like,
I sat there and I thought, there is no response that I have that I could put out there that would be acceptable. So I'm just going to say, "You're a good guy, but I got to fire you." It's just, it's a numbers game. I'm sorry.
It's a numbers game.
I wasn't going to, everybody else, I was trying to come up with an insult or make some fun. No, was nothing there to make fun of. That was very admirable.
"You're a good man, and I hate to do this, but it's a numbers game."
As I sent him off, I did say, "I will give you a recommendation, though, if you need it." "I'll give you a good reference." One guy came back and said, "Can I take a picture with you?" And I said, "Sure, you take a picture. I mean, and you can look at it on your way to the unemployment line."
You were really playing a character there, weren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, it was funny. It was like the more abusive I got, the more people gathered around and laughed and like, "Yeah, I'm next.
Yeah. Obviously, the boys picked the right person for the job.
Well, it raised $600 that we added to the charity.
Just for firing people.
Yeah, just for firing people. Standing out there firing people. That got $600, $5 at a time.
Well, here's a little known Tri-Data trivia fact. I actually worked at Tri-Data for a summer.
That's true.
And I was not fired.
No, you had to go back to school.
No, I showed up for work pretty punctually, and I pulled staples for 8 hours a day, and it was horrible.
Unlike our nephew Charles.
That's right.
He had to be talked to several times sternly. He's only a doctor now.
Yeah, that's...
he didn't succeed at Tri-Data too well, but he is a doctor.
He didn't do too well at Tri-Data. He didn't do well as a bag boy.
No, or as a mopper.
Yeah, it was not his...
But he excels as a doctor.
He does excel as a doctor. He was too good for those jobs, I guess.
I guess so. I don't know.
Me, I just kind of sat there and pulled staples quietly and listened to the radio for 8 hours a day.
Yeah. Well, that's a good work if you can get it, huh?
It's good work if you can get it. Still to this day, when I pull a staple, I think back longingly to those days at Tri-Data back in the warehouse pulling staples.
Yeah, well, you have to wear gloves so you don't cut yourself up and everything.
I didn't wear gloves.
Oh, well, no. Be careful. We don't have any on-the-job injuries. You get fired if you get injured.
You can't do that.
Yeah, I can't afford any injuries. You get injured, you're fired.
This thing called workers' compensation.
That's what they told me that my first day on the railroad when I went out when I was working track work.
Yeah.
They stuck a bar in my hand and said, go to work. And I said, well, I thought I was supposed to have a safety briefing. They said, your safety briefing is if you get hurt, you're fired. Now get your ass out there.
Well, given the fact that you were firing people, we thought it'd be a good episode to talk about employment law today.
Yeah, to know if any of these people I fired, it'll stick.
Well, they never actually worked for you, I don't think, to begin with, so.
So I didn't want them filing for unemployment. That's what a few people came up and they said, I don't have $5, but would you still fire me? And I said, I'm not giving these things away, then everybody will want one. And they said, oh, well, if you're not firing me, does that mean I'm hired? And I said, no, you're neither hired nor fired. You're like in employment purgatory. You're right there in the middle till something happens.
Well, with employment law, there's a lot of different issues. There can be things like wage and hour issues, depending on whether or not somebody was paid properly. OSHA, which we've talked about a little bit before, and what was lacking evidently on the railroad without your safety briefing, which has to do with occupational safety and hazard.
Well, they're actually managed by the FRA.
Oh, that's right.
The railroad. They're not under OSHA.
They have their own gig, right?
Yeah. Federal Railroad Administration.
There can be health benefit issues, workers' compensation issues, whistleblower issues, unions, immigration, equal opportunity, medical leave. The list can go on and on and on when you're talking about employment law. There are a lot of issues out there.
Man, I'll say. It's a landmine out there.
It is. It can be a dangerous area.
Yeah. You got to be careful.
It's hard to be a business owner.
That's right.
Now, some of the terms that you'll hear a lot when you're talking about employment law, and this has to do with hiring and firing, because that's mainly what we're going to talk about since that's what you were kind of doing.
Right.
Is right to work and at-will employment. So at-will employment is generally described as any hiring is presumed to be at-will. That is, the employer is free to discharge the individual for good cause, bad cause, or no cause at all. And the employee is equally free to quit, strike, or otherwise cease work. So it's kind of a nobody's held to anything.
No harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul. The Supreme Court of California explained in a case, an employer may terminate its employees at will for any or no reason. The employer may act peremptorily, arbitrarily, or inconsistently without providing specific protections such as prior warning, fair procedures, objective evaluation, or preferential reassignment. The mere existence of an employment relationship affords no expectation protectable by law that employment will continue or will end on certain conditions unless the parties have actually adopted such terms.
Well, that sounds pretty willy-nilly.
It does.
I mean, it sounds like...
I mean, at-will employment means they can fire you for no reason at all.
Well, there were people that I let go that I didn't really fire, but it was a numbers game. It was like, you know, our business at one point had 50 employees. Now we're down to 11.
Yeah.
So there were some that had to go unvoluntarily or involuntarily. Probably it's about the same thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't really consider I was firing them. I was basically laying them off, but I was never going to hire them again.
you had to downsize.
Yeah. So they weren't really fired. They were just, you know, pushed out. It's like musical chairs.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people think that, you know, if you're fired, that you have some sort of cause of action against your former employer. But, I mean, in an at-will employment state, you really don't.
Hmm.
And that is predominantly what we have in the United States is at-will employment. Most states adopt that.
So, but there are other ones that you can, because I've read ones where, like, say that the lady became pregnant and got fired.
Right.
And that's what she deemed that she was fired because of that, because she wasn't going to be able to work or something like that.
There are other protections. I'll get into that a little bit. But okay. That would be essentially not firing for no reason. That would be alleged to have been fired for a reason.
Oh.
So you can fire somebody for no reason.
I don't like your face.
Well, I don't think you can say that either.
Oh, really?
That wouldn't be a good... As an attorney, I would not advise you to fire someone because of their face.
Can you just wear a bag over your head all day and I might be able to stand you working here?
So the original common law rule for dismissal of employees was, according to William Blackstone, that unless another practice was agreed, employees would be deemed to be hired for a fixed term of 1 year. That was the original kind of common law thing back in the 1700s.
Really?
Yeah, we've talked about William Blackstone before. and he is the basis for a lot of laws and a lot of common law. Sir William Blackstone was born on July 10, 1723, and died on February 14, 1780, and he was an English jurist, a judge, a Tory politician, and he's most noted for writing commentaries on the laws of England. Huh. And we have talked about him before. I don't know if you remember his name or not.
Well, the name does sound familiar, but I think there was a magician with that name, too. I might be confusing
there,
you with.
There was. And I actually had one of his toy magic kits.
Yes, I'm not sure what I'm remembering. I'm remembering a Blackstone, but I don't know which one he was.
but he has a lot of common law backing, like when you go back and look at things, so mm-hmm. his name pops up quite frequently. But that was his original common law was, if you're hired, you're hired for a year.
Yeah.
Now, there was another kind of theory over the 19th century that most states in the North adhered to, and that was a rule that the period by which an employee was paid, a week, a month, or a year, determined the period of notice that should be given before dismissal was effective. So, for example, if you were paid weekly, then you should be given a week's notice. If you were paid monthly, then you're given a month notice. Which mm-hmm. that seems like a pretty reasonable arrangement to me.
Well, yeah. The only problem is from the employer standpoint is once you decide you have to get rid of somebody, you don't really want them working there anymore most of the time.
That's true.
Now, sometimes it's okay. Sometimes they're just moving on to another job and they did a good job for you and everybody's amicable. But if you're firing somebody, it's because they're not doing a good job. And if you think you say, well, all right, You're not going to have a job in two more weeks or in a month.
Yeah.
Then they're around there and they're probably a worse employee now while you have them there.
Probably planting landmines.
Yeah. So you're going to need to just say, look, here's a month's worth of money. Stay home.
Yeah. That's almost what it amounts to, is like a severance package.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That happened a lot. I've seen that happen a lot, actually, where people say, I'm going to fire you. I'm giving you 2 weeks notice that your job will no longer be here. Here's 2 weeks pay. Don't worry about coming back. Clean your desk out.
Yeah. I've done it both ways. Some I've done that because I didn't trust them to be there
and
what they would do. Other ones, though, they were good dudes, and I let them work right up to the end.
Yeah. You
know? Of course, I guess they'd probably rather take the money and not work. So
probably. But a lot of times,
I guess you're rewarding poor performance.
If I was going to be advising you that, and if you're going to give somebody 2 weeks' pay like that, I would have them sign some sort of release, which essentially would say, I'm releasing you from any and all future claims in exchange for the severance package, which would be 2 weeks' pay.
Yeah.
So you might as well get some bang for your buck there if you're going to give them 2 weeks.
But you're still going to get charged with unemployment if they go file unemployment.
Yeah, that's true. But they might not. They wouldn't have a claim for anything else.
Right.
So they might not anyway, but why not have them sign one anyway?
Sure.
So you're already paying them something, so you might as well get some consideration for it.
Yeah.
It's funny, that period term like that is almost, it's very similar to the kind of theory for a landlord-tenant situation where you don't actually have a written lease. Because mm-hmm. if you're on a month-to-month tenant, then you have to give basically 1 month notice
right.
for it to break the lease. So if you're year to year, then you have to give a year notice. So
it's kind of a rollover, like a rollover contract too.
Essentially, yeah.
Contracts for a year, and if nobody says anything, it automatically renews for another year.
And if it goes on indefinitely, do you know what that kind of contract that's called?
An indefinite contract?
It's got to be a bit more creative. It's an evergreen contract.
An evergreen contract, like the tree, huh?
Like the tree. It always is always going on.
It's always green.
Evergreen contracts are frowned upon because they shouldn't go on forever, probably.
Yeah.
There should be some definite term.
Yeah, but they do seem to hold up, because I've had, like, we'll have a contract with a customer, especially larger ones. They want to have contracts. And they'll say, well, when was this contract signed? Well, it was signed 5 years ago. Oh, no, well, we've got to get an up-to-date contract. I said, well, it does say right up front that this renews each year unless either party, you know, notifies the other. Oh, okay, all right, well, then we're good.
We're good. It's okay.
Yeah.
Now, the at-will theory traces its roots back to 1877. I want to get into that a little bit to trace that history. But before that, I think we have a pending motion before the court today.
Why, yes, your judgeship. I can say that with all honesty now.
You actually can now.
Yes. We would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, you may approach. Who do we have on the docket?
We have on the docket our good friends at BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
Well, not right now, but, you know, sometimes your state of mind can interfere with those things.
And BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
you can start communicating in under 24 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
An area like here, even though we're a bustling metropolis in West Virginia, there's not a lot of access to mental health professionals. You might not find somebody who can help you out.
That's exactly right. The system is flooded.
The service is available for clients worldwide.
You can log in to your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as in traditional therapy.
You don't want that.
No, sir.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
Visit their website and read testimonials that are posted daily. BetterHelp.com/reviews.
So visit BetterHelp, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/court, and join the over 700,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
There's a special offer for court-appointed listeners. You get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/court. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/court.
So if you're feeling down, Mike and Tommy suggest you go get the help that may help you out.
So the at-will practice is traced to a treatise published by Horace Gray Wood in 1877 called Master and Servant.
Horace Gray Wood.
Master and Servant.
Master and Servant.
It's a thrilling read.
Wasn't that a movie, Commander and Master or something like that? Master and Commander or something?
It did. It had
what's his name that was the Spartan there or whatever when he started out.
I'm drawing a complete
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, yes.
Yeah.
Master and Commander.
Yeah. Is that what he wrote?
I think that was the name of it.
Yeah.
No, but this guy wrote Master and Servant.
Oh. Got you off track there, didn't
you? You did.
I have a tendency to do that.
And typically, even if you look at the headnotes now in Westlaw, if you're referring to, well, I don't know about now, but I would say in books that were contemporary when I was in law school, if you were trying to find certain subjects related to employment, you would actually find it under Master and Servant. So that kind of stuck. I don't know that I've seen that recently, but if you look at slightly dated books, then you might see that.
Slightly dated ones?
Like myself. I'm slightly dated.
You haven't reached your spoilage point yet?
Not yet. I am suffering, though. Wood cited 4 U.S. cases as authority for the rule that when a hiring was indefinite, the burden of proof was on the servant to prove that an indefinite employment term was for 1 year. Courts have noted that Wood's rule was quickly cited as authority for another proposition. Wood, however, misinterpreted 2 of the cases, which in fact showed that Massachusetts and Michigan, at least, the rule that employees should have noticed before dismissal according to the periods of their contract. So he actually kind of misapplied the law in his treatise.
Oh, no.
According to these cases. But it didn't matter because people really liked his rule and it stuck.
So he overrode state law that was already established, huh?
Kind of. He persuaded him with his treatise.
Oh.
In New York, the first case to adopt Wood's rule was Martin v. New York Life Insurance Company in 1895. Bartlett J. asserted that New York law now followed Wood's treatise, which meant that an employee who received $10,000 paid salary over a year could be dismissed immediately. The case did not make reference to the previous authority. So basically they said, don't pay attention to the previous authority. Look at this learned treatise by Horace Gray Wood. It's called Master and Servant. It's really good. It's amazing. You should read it. We're going to follow that rule now.
We've decided out of all the treatises out there, this is the treatise that treats us best.
Because 4 years earlier in 1891 in the Adams v. Fitzpatrick case, the court held that New York law followed the general practice which was in existence there that required notice similar to pay periods. But New York cases after that Martin v. New York Life Insurance Company case, they started following the at-will rule all into the 20th century. So even though there was precedent citing the other way, he essentially changed the law with this treatise.
So do you, according to that then, like if somebody does, if you are going to get rid of somebody, do you have to give them two weeks pay?
No, not now.
I mean, you could just say walk out the door and that's it.
Huh? That's it. And well, that's in states that are at will employment, true at will employment, which is most of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think most states are at will employment now. So you don't have to give any reason. You can just say, I'm firing you. Today's your last day.
So it's really more of a courtesy, huh?
It is, yeah.
Because you expect employees to give you a 2 weeks notice so you can find somebody to replace them.
Right.
Or prepare for their vacancy. So I guess in return, you should be willing to pay someone for 2 weeks if you're getting rid of them.
Exactly. And it's kind of a professional courtesy type thing, depending on what field you're in. For example, for an attorney to basically give 2 weeks notice and leave, that wouldn't be very professional, because especially if you're doing litigation, things like that, because that's not a lot of time. You have cases, you have things coming up. I mean, you would really leave your employer in the lurch if you're an attorney and just gave 2 weeks notice.
Well, I'd say if you're an IT director too.
Yeah, probably so.
Mine gave me about 8 days notice.
Yeah.
And said he was going, and it's like, oh, I got to find somebody. You got all the keys to the kingdom, and I got to find somebody to replace you in 8 days.
Yeah. Thanks.
That
a
was
lot.
Rough.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah.
You're a real team player here. Because, you know, if you'd wanted to move on from him, I'm sure you would have given him more than 8 days.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would be a professional courtesy.
I'm sure he would have demanded it.
Yeah. Now, the doctrine of at-will employment can be overridden if there is an express contract. So if you have an employment contract, usually that'll state how much time you must be given. And it will also state the reasons why you can be fired or why you can be terminated.
Would that be like a professional football player or something?
It could be.
Is that an employment contract that they sign, basically? Because it's a set number of years for a set number of dollars and has certain things they have to comply with?
It is.
Things like that?
But there's a whole different thing going on there with the union, the players union, and all that.
Oh,
okay. That opens up a whole different can of worms. Mm. So it's similar to that, but not really, because there's other things at play there.
Okay. Do they do it like with CEOs and things like that?
Yeah, with
CEOs. Is
that
more like it?
I would say with that. Like if you, for example, if you worked at a law firm and you had a contract for a year, then they said, we're going to pay you this much for a year. And then
after that, we'll look at it.
After that, we'll look at it. If we're going to terminate you, we'll give you 60 days notice. If you're going to leave, you give us 60 days notice.
Yeah.
So you could have a contract like that. And at that point, you could be terminated, but you wouldn't be terminated on the spot. You'd be entitled to those 60 days.
Right.
And that's, again, that's more of kind of a professional type thing.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to find that maybe with a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant, things like that in professional areas.
Mm-hmm.
But you might not find that at like a fast food restaurant or something like that.
Right.
That's going to be more like, well, just leave.
Yeah.
So.
And leave your apron on the table and your hat.
Now, there are 36 U.S. states and the District of Columbia that recognized implied contracts as an exception to at-will employment too.
Yeah.
So under the employed contract exception, an employer may not fire an employee when an implied contract is formed between the employer and the employee, even though no express written instrument regarding the employment relationship exists. But the problem is you have to prove that there's an implied contract, which is not as easy as actually having an actual express written contract, which is always a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
And the burden of proof is on the fired employee to show that there was an implied contract. Usually those are found whenever the employer's personal policies or handbooks indicate that an employee will not be fired except for good cause or some other reason like that, or there was some sort of process for firing and they didn't follow it. So even if there's no actual express contract with the employee and the employer, if there's some sort of handbook which says we're not going to fire you except for good cause, or we're going to give you some sort of review process, and if you don't fix the problem within so much time, then we'll let you go. So if the employer doesn't follow that, then they could be sued for some sort of breach of implied contract.
So if they don't follow their own rules.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you make your rules, and if you don't follow them, then you're liable for it. If you don't make any rules, then it's just carte blanche.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, whenever you have an employee handbook that has to deal with termination, you want to make sure you're very careful with how it's written, because it doesn't really benefit you to put anything in there, because it makes your job actually harder.
Boy, they spelled it out on the railroad. It has a big, long book.
Oh, I'm
rule
sure.
Rule book that covers everything. And I mean, like, you know, it spells out your fireable offenses and things like that where you're dismissed right there, like drinking on the job or being under the influence of drugs or insubordination, if it's deemed insubordination, stuff like that.
Well, there was also probably some sort of collective bargaining or union type things as well, too, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Well, nobody was ever really fired.
Yeah.
And now, if you're a supervisor, you were.
Yeah.
But as a union employee, no, you were never fired. You might get fired, but that was like, it was like being put on probation or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you were gone for 6 months, but then they'd hire you back. And a lot of times they would trade fired employees giving them their job back for the union dropping time card claims or something like that. So we'll put these three guys back to work. You drop this $100,000 worth of claims right here.
It's a lot of horse trading.
Yeah.
Even though the $100,000 wasn't related to the people that were fired?
No, it didn't have to be. It was just something that the union then would drop. They wouldn't pursue it any further.
That doesn't seem fair.
They just wanted to get their people back to work. So,
well,
and a lot of the time claims that weren't good anyway, and they were ones that were going to have to go to arbitration or something.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. That's why they were there. It wasn't just regular ones, day-to-day ones. They were ones that had been sitting there for a while that were awaiting being ruled on.
Now, there is some exceptions to firing people. You can't just go all willy-nilly like you were talking about. And that if somebody is discriminated against or a protected class, then you can't fire them. That's one of the things. Well, I'm not. If they are a protected class, you can fire them. But if you are discriminated against them and they are a protected class, you can't fire them.
You can't fire them for whatever reason makes them a protected class.
Exactly. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, is the body which governs those kinds of claims. So you can have an EEOC claim, or in West Virginia, we call it the Human Rights Commission.
Yeah.
That's what it is here in West Virginia. And so if someone believes they've been discriminated against at work because of their race, color, religion, sex, including pregnancy, gender identity, or sexual orientation, national origin, age, disability, or genetic information, then you can file a charge of discrimination. And that's essentially a signed statement asserting that an employer, union, or labor organization engaged in employment discrimination. And that you're asking the EEOC to take some sort of action to get you your job back or to just kind of look into it. And I've filed EEOC claims before on behalf of people if they felt they've been discriminated against.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes they are. Sometimes it doesn't actually, they don't say they're fired for those reasons, but you can show through a pattern of how their work performance and things that were said to them at different times and complaints made about what was said to them, that you can show that, yes, in fact, they most likely were fired because of one of those reasons.
Yeah. It's like they give them the reason, it's because you miss work too much.
Yeah.
But somebody had faced maybe a bunch of things that were said that were not right or something like that. And then they go back and look at his actual record and missed like 2 days in the year or something like that. Well, how can you say he missed too much? Look at this guy over here. You didn't fire him and he missed a dozen days.
Yeah.
So you better have your foot on a rock if you're going to do that.
Oh, absolutely. So you're almost better off to give no reason as an employer if you're going to fire somebody. If you give some sort of bogus reason, it's going to come out. And then people will think, well, this is a bogus reason. There's some other reason why they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So... But it's sometimes hard to prove those kinds of cases because especially if there's not some sort of record there to back it up, if you are discriminated against at work and you don't actually make complaints about it and send emails and document it,
mm-hmm.
it becomes real tough to show that this is probably why you were fired or that you were in some sort of kind of a hostile work environment like that.
Well, and contrary to that is whoever your supervisors are, you're only as good as them because they're the ones that said, look, we got to get rid of him. He's not doing his job. And then you say, okay, give me the examples. And he's got no examples of anything. He doesn't any just general broad statements about the guy. You better have specific days and dates and any witnesses and things like that to what you're firing him for.
Yeah. So you can be protected from firing under those reasons, under the EEOC.
Mm-hmm.
Another way your job can be protected is under the Family Medical Leave Act, or FMLA, which I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
I am.
You are.
I am familiar.
The FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, was a 1993 law, and it requires covered employers to provide employees with job-protected and unpaid leave for qualified medical and family reasons. So it's not a paid leave, but it's your job is protected during it. And it was a major part of Bill Clinton's first-term domestic agenda, and he signed it into law on February 5th, 1993.
I remember it.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you remember when he signed it into law?
February 5th, 1993.
But do you remember watching it on TV or anything?
Yeah, I do. I remember it because, you know, the thing that made the difference to me is this something that you have to pay people for or you just have to give them the time off?
Right.
And as long as they're not demanding that you pay them, then I don't really see any problem with it. You know, I've had people that, you know, I had a guy come to me and say, I'm going to have a surgery and I'm going to have to miss about 3 months of work. Well, I still have a job. I said, sure. you know, and that whether there was FMLA or not, I would have done that. You know?
Especially if they're a good employee. You don't want to lose them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the guy's falling on hard times. You're not going to cut him loose just because of that.
The story of the FMLA is kind of interesting. Vicki Yandel, she was a receptionist who was fired after asking for a few weeks off to care for her daughter that had cancer. She was on stage with President Clinton whenever he signed the bill into law. That's why I was asking if you remember that.
No.
And there was a made-for-television movie called A Child's Wish that was based on actual events from that. John Ritter starred as the father of the terminally ill 16-year-old girl, and he is a father who was fired from his job for taking time off to tend to his 16-year-old daughter who was battling cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than accepting his dismissal, Ed decides to fight back. With the help of United States Senator, he lobbies United States Congress and is a stimulus to passage of the FMLA. Because cancer is life-threatening, she's visited by the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and she wishes to go to the White House to visit the Oval Office and hopefully see President Clinton. The Make-A-Wish Foundation in the movie said they're not sure if they could make it happen or not, but eventually she does go to the Oval Office and meet Clinton, who played himself in a cameo appearance in the movie. And Missy is based on the merging of two women, Melissa Weaver and Dixie Yandel. Ed Chandler character, the one played by Ritter, is very closely related to George Yandel and his wife Vicky, the one who was on stage who helped push the FMLA through Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, in real life, Vicky was the one that was on stage with President Clinton.
Yeah,
it's kind of an interesting little side piece to that story.
Yeah. Well, that's good cause that they do that, and I guess, you know, I have the flexibility at mine. I can make those judgments. And I don't see how people could do that. But corporations don't have a heart.
Well,
when you're working for a big company, they don't care. You're just another number.
And the FMLA probably wouldn't apply to you. The FMLA allows eligible employees to take up to 12 work weeks of unpaid leave during any 12-month period to care for a new child, care for a seriously ill family member, or recover from a serious illness. The FMLA covers both public and private sector employees, but certain categories of employees, including elected officials and highly compensated employees, are excluded from the law or face certain limitations. So in order to be eligible for FMLA leave, an employee must have worked for the employer for at least 12 months, have worked at least 1,250 hours over the past 12 months, and work for an employer with at least 50 employees in a 75-mile radius. Although there are several states that have passed laws which kind of increase that exposure, requiring fewer employees and things like that. So the different things, like I said, you can do to care for a new child, whether it's a birth, adoption, or placement of a child in foster care, to care for a seriously ill family member, to recover from the worker's own serious illness, to care for an injured service member in the family, to address qualifying emergencies arising out of a family member's deployment. And like I said, it's not paid leave, but the job is kept open for you and you get to keep your benefits during that period.
Right.
So it's kind of a good thing. And it is limited essentially to larger corporations who might not feel the brunt of having an employee out like that. I think if, you know, for a smaller company, holding a job open for somebody, even though you're not paying them, could be a bit of a hardship because you don't have somebody to fill that key component that person was probably doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they limited it to that area. I mean, if you're able to hold a job over somebody, that's good for you, but some companies probably couldn't do that.
Right.
So,
yeah, well, you just have to do what you have to do, but and it would depend on the individual. If the individual though was doing a good job, I'd do, you know, whatever to work with them to get them through a tough situation, whether it was them having the problem or somebody in their family.
What if they filed an FMLA leave that said they had to get to Bonnaroo to go see a concert?
Well, then they're fired.
You hear that, Griffin?
Yeah, I don't care if they're family. They're fired.
Now, one other term, and the last one that I'm going to talk about, is the right to work laws.
Yeah.
And when you hear that around a lot, you think it kind of conjures up the thought, you have the right to work. Well, it's actually not what it means. It doesn't mean they're going to keep their job open for you, because it's still going to be at-will employment, like we said.
Just because it says that doesn't mean it's true.
What right to work means is that it prohibits union security agreements between companies and labor unions. So under these laws, employees in unionized workplaces are banned from negotiating contracts which require all members who benefit from the union contract to contribute to the cost of union representation. So what that means is that the job can't have an agreement with the union that says, we're going to hire this person, but you have to be in the union. They don't allow that anymore in these different right-to-work states.
Oh, there's not very many right-to-work states, though, is there?
Oh, no. There's right-to-work laws. And this can either be by statute or some sort of constitutional provision, exist in 27 U.S. states. They're in the South, the Midwest, and the Western states.
That say basically you can't organize?
Well, no, you can organize, but you can't force a person to be in a union to have that job, is what that means.
Because I guess the only ones I'm familiar with, you had to join the union that was there, like the railroad. You didn't have a choice.
Well,
you had to join the union.
Yeah, and that's not the case anymore.
Hmm.
So now, again, the railroad in particular falls under a whole different set of guidelines given the scope of it. And I think a lot, I mean, I have no idea if like the West Virginia right to work laws even apply to the railroad because it, I think it's governed by some sort of
the federal government.
Yeah. So I don't even know that this would apply to it. So you might be right there. You might actually have to, but in states, these laws are allowed under the 1947 federal Taft-Hartley Act. That's where the stem of the right to work laws began.
I've heard of the Taft-Hartley Act before.
Yeah.
That has to do with railroads too.
It does. So right-to-work laws do not aim to provide general guarantee of employment to people seeking work, but rather are a government ban on contractual agreements between employers and union employees requiring workers to pay for the cost of union representation. So that's what right-to-work laws mean. They don't. It's not some sort of you have the right to work or you have a guaranteed job or anything like that. So it's important to know the distinction between at-will, right-to-work, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So right-to-work doesn't mean you have the right to work, although that's what it says.
They word things, the government words things funny.
Well, and it's very important when you're trying to advance a policy that you come up with the right term for it.
Right. And they didn't.
Well, like if you talk about, they did to benefit their agenda. Who doesn't? Right to work? Yeah, I'm sure for the
right to work.
Yeah. Well, it's like if you talk about the abortion issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm pro-life. Does that mean you're pro-death? Like, yeah. You know, I mean, the way you coin your own side is can be very important.
Mm-hmm.
So who's not for right to work?
Who's not for pro-life?
Yeah. Life's good, right?
Yeah. But it doesn't come down to black and white like that.
No, but it does give a first impression, which kind of can jade how people look at things.
Right.
If you just look at the term, the way something is termed, and you don't actually read it, then that's what that does. And a lot of times when you see legislation, statutes, codes, things like that, there'll be some sort of title for the law.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be somewhere in there that says the titles are mere reference only or not part of the actual law itself, which is always a very important thing to read because it can be titled anything, but the law is what is actually written. So
you must comply with what is written.
Exactly.
I did some look because, you know, for looking for funny reasons or strange reasons, or maybe not very good reasons, but reasons that were given why people were fired to see whether they were legitimate or not. So maybe as a lawyer, you can decide whether you think some of these were on a solid ground or not.
How about as a judge, I judge them.
That's right. You can judge them now. I forget about that. All right. Here's this one guy. After feeling short of breath due to asthma, a former New Jersey-based factory assembly line worker asked his supervisor if he could go home, which was only 3 miles from the plant, and get his inhaler. Instead, the supervisor criticized him for working slowly and told him, pick up his belongings and leave.
That sounds like a bad reason.
So you think because he had a physical problem, that was probably discrimination, huh?
I do.
Well, the jury saw that way, too, awarded him $45,000 for damages and wages.
Ugh.
How about this? One of many people's biggest fears is undoubtedly the pocket dial or butt dial. Whether it's to an ex-partner or your boss, it's scary imagining certain people listening in on your conversation. But that's exactly what happened to this guy in Atlanta when he accidentally pocket dialed his former boss of Georgia's subsequent injury trust fund while venting about him to his wife. Instead of hanging up, Cohn listened to in on the conversation for upwards of 12 minutes and as a result fired the guy that had butt dialed him. Cohn filed grievance saying that his privacy was violated.
I don't know about that. I think if you accidentally call somebody, you don't have any expectation of privacy.
Well, you had an expectation of privacy, but your accident spoiled it.
Exactly.
I think your butt's guilty.
I had a girlfriend, actually. We were kind of serious, but not super serious. Actually dialed me by accident while she was on a date with some other guy.
That's not good.
No. No, it wasn't. So and we did.
Hey, what are you doing? Oh, I didn't mean to call you. See ya.
Well, it sounded like they were having a good time.
Oh, no. Oh, she didn't know she had dialed
no.
you.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
At least they were at dinner.
That was one of those in Grado Flaciato or whatever that you talked about before.
In Flagrante Delecto?
Yeah, that was one of those things, wasn't it?
The heat of the moment?
Yeah.
No, they were not in the heat of the moment. They were in the heat of an entree, I believe.
It was a law firm in Florida that fired 14 workers because they all wore the color orange to work. And what they didn't know was they just changed management there. And the for whatever reason, these workers always wore orange on payday. And it was payday. And they were just merely wearing it in their tradition of wearing orange on payday. And the management decided it must be some kind of protest and fired them all.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, well, they filed a federal complaint against the law firm.
Does it say what the outcome was?
No, it doesn't say. I could probably have researched it, but I'm not that good.
I'm going to guess it settled for an undisclosed amount of money.
It was a lady in New Zealand that was fired for typing in all caps.
Now, that sounds like somebody who could be fired for cause. I can't stand when people type in all caps. Ugh.
In an email that she sent out to colleagues explaining how to fill out certain forms, she used a variety of capital letters and bold and red fonts. Ooh, a red font.
Yeah.
While it was her way of helping to explain instructions to colleagues, management saw it as confrontational and fired her. Later, she was awarded $17,000 for lost wages and wrongful termination.
I disagree with that one. If you're bolding things and putting in red and you're all caps, you're being very angry and confrontational. I agree.
Here was one where a cartoonist was fired because he made a cartoon that bashed corporations. He had been working for 2 decades as a cartoonist for Farm News. I don't guess farmers have much of a sense of humor. And he was laid off due to one of his cartoons. The cartoon was published in a weekly It's Friday column featuring 2 farmers chatting, with one saying, "I wish there was more profit in farming," and the other replying, "There is. In the year 2015, the CEOs of Monsanto, DuPont, Pioneer, and John Deere combined made more money than 2,129 Iowa farmers."
I think that's funny.
So after the backlash from those corporations that were mentioned, he was placed on a permanent hiatus. But he was rehired 2 months later after agreeing to apologize to the offended companies.
So your comic was a little bit too funny and too on point.
Too on point, that's right. Here was a guy at a McDonald's that person ordered a hamburger. I think this person was trying to swindle him, but he ordered a hamburger, and he came back up. He said, "Hey, would you mind putting some cheese on this hamburger for me?" "Well, buddy, that's called a cheeseburger." You know, but instead, the employee just went, got a slice of cheese, and slapped it on the guy's burger.
Yeah.
So they fired him for giving away cheese and not charging him for a cheeseburger.
Huh.
That's pretty tough, huh?
It's a tough world out there.
Well, here's one that's really tough.
I thought the customer was always right.
Well, the customer was right. It was the guy behind the counter that was wrong.
Yeah, but if the guy mistakenly ordered a hamburger and he wanted a cheeseburger, I mean, do you need to ring him up for 15 cents or you just slap a piece of cheese on it?
Well, it was probably better than him bringing it back up and saying, "Hey, that was supposed to be a cheeseburger." And then you have to take the hamburger back. That's a total loss. And then sell him a cheeseburger. Maybe you get an extra 15 cents for the cheeseburger. But now you got a hamburger you can't use. You got to throw it away.
Yeah.
So you actually lost out of the deal.
Exactly.
So the guy was probably a good up and comer, but instead he got fired.
That's right.
In 2012, the day after President Barack Obama was reelected, a Las Vegas-based CEO fired 22 employees from his then 114-employee company, claiming that he was preparing for any upcoming taxes and regulations as a result of Obama's election. So you think that's a good reason? Well, the guy that got elected is going to come after us, so I might as well fire you now preemptively to cut my losses.
I don't think so. I don't know if you could sue him for that, but who knows?
Now, here's a guy that was saved for leaving his assigned area to save a life. Upon spotting an older man drowning in unguarded waters, the then 21-year-old lifeguard left his post to save him. However, after successfully rescuing him, he found that he was fired for leaving his assigned area. Shortly after, his supervisors offered him his job back, saying they acted hastily. After declining the offer, and much to his surprise, the kid was awarded a key to his city, which was Hollandale Beach, Florida, for his courageous act.
Huh.
But they fired him at first because he wasn't in his guard chair, because he was rescuing a guy's life. He's a lifeguard. That's what you're supposed to do, not sit in the chair.
Oh, he's a human being.
Yeah. In 2013, a group of 15 miners were fired for their participation in performing the dance craze, the Harlem Shake, while underground in Agnew Gold Mine in Australia. While only 8 were filmed dancing the video, the company fired people who were simply watching, calling the entire act a safety issue. Then there was a lady in 2010 who was fired from her job at Citibank because she was too hot. According to her, she was told that as a result of the shape of her figure, such clothes were purportedly too distracting for her male colleagues and supervisors to bear. Apparently, her male managers gave her a list of unacceptable clothes, and on it were turtlenecks, pencil skirts, fitted suits, and 3-inch heels. Because she did not agree with these rules, she was fired.
Huh. So, that sounds like a good case.
Well, it said that she couldn't because she was had signed a mandatory arbitration clause when she was originally hired.
Huh.
So she couldn't. And then here's some really quick ones where people wrote in and talked about what they were fired for. And one was a waiter, and he said, I asked a famous actor for an autograph while they were eating at the restaurant I worked in.
Oh, yeah, it's a big no-no.
They were fired. One lady said, I couldn't staple papers to my boss's satisfaction, so I lost my job. You were an unstapler?
Yeah.
Here was a person who was fired for not being a good stapler.
I will tell you one thing. If the corners are not lined up, that does drive me crazy. I will unstaple it and staple it back.
Now, this one deserved firing. This is the one I got fired because I stole people's food from the fridge. You know, the one in the communal fridge that somebody came in, somebody took my sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, or then you always have the story about somebody brought in their urine sample because they were going to the doctor and somebody thought it was apple juice.
Yeah.
You know, you always have that going on, too. One person says, I stopped a car being robbed while on my shift, and I got fired for bringing too much publicity to my workplace. That must be a shady place if they didn't want the publicity of one of their employees saving someone's life or something. I was fired for wearing a tie that sported the colors of my favorite football team. I think his boss was of the rival football team.
That would make sense, yeah.
I was fired for asking my students for dating advice. Well, the students were 8 to 9 years of age. But still, you know, that'd be a funny conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's too provocative. I had an employee who got drunk on her lunch break, flipped her car, went to jail, and got her mugshot made with our company logo on her shirt.
Ooh, that's a no-no.
Yep, she was gone. I had an officer under me. He was reported in a tree. I went to investigate the last place he was seen. He was still there attempting to pepper spray birds.
Sounds like he went a little cuckoo.
It sounds like it. He was up there with the cuckoos. Here was one. I like this one. I was a blacksmith at a federal historical site, and I used to make nails as a demonstration. I didn't see this, but another blacksmith was making nails one day when I was off, and a lady remarked, they didn't have nails back then. 17th century, where she was referring to. To which that blacksmith replied, right, lady, they scotch taped Christ to the cross.
He was let go for that?
Yeah, because he was
a surly blacksmith.
That's a pretty good retort.
Yeah. I think you want your blacksmith with a little edge to him.
This guy says he wasn't the manager, but he worked at a Walmart where he had a coworker in another department show up, clock in, and leave to go to his other job for the day, and then return at the end of the shift at the other job in time to check out, in time to clock out.
He said it's good work if you can get it.
He got away with it for 2+ months before they finally caught him, and needless to say, he and his manager were both fired.
Wow.
And lastly, said, I had to ask the owner of my old job to fire someone who had less seniority than me because she kept planting things on me to accuse me of theft. It was pretty funny watching her put stuff under my desk when she thought no one was looking, then try to Scooby-Doo dramatic reveal at the end of the day. So she wanted his job. You know, a small company, there's not many other jobs to aspire to. So she wanted this guy's job, so she figured she was going to
frame him for stealing something from the company so that she could have his job.
It's a cutthroat world out there.
You know, you see her on a security camera climbing in, putting something under his desk or something like that.
What do we have here? It's the mask. Old Man Withers.
Oh, look here. It's a stapler. He's got it over here in his bag. He was going to take that stapler home. You should fire him.
There's all kinds of crazy people out there.
Yeah, it's a desperate world.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions about terms we talked about. And today's first one is right to work. What is right to work?
Well, right to work doesn't mean you have the right to work.
What is it for?
It means that you can work and you can't. They can't require you to have to join the union.
That's right. And it is the law in 27 states, and it stems from the Taft-Hartley Act. And it is a very favorable law for businesses.
Was that President Taft?
I believe.
No.
No, it was not.
It was well after him.
I think the Taft-Hartley Act actually was passed over the veto of the president, if I remember correctly.
Really?
Yeah. So it was passed by 2/3 majority to override the veto of the president.
Well, all right.
I'm just speaking just totally
off
out of the
top
blue.
Of your head.
Yeah.
All right.
I could be wrong. I don't
just
know.
Like Blackstone the magician.
That's right. Who was Blackstone, by the way? We'll add that one to the question.
Well, he was the guy that did the informed treatise.
Learned treatise. A learned treatise.
Yeah.
Yep.
That everybody used as a go-by for employment purposes.
It was called the Commentaries on the Laws of England.
Commentaries on the Laws of England.
We should do a whole episode about old Blackstone.
Yeah, he sounds like he was a good dude.
And what is the EEOC?
Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
That's right.
And they see that people don't get fired for discriminatory practices.
That's right. And what is the FMLA?
FMLA is a Family Medical Leave Act. That you says that you can take a certain number of days off without pay, regardless of the situation, to take care of people or take care of yourself or whatever in your family and stuff like that, and they can't fire you.
That's 12 work weeks in over the course of any 12-month period. To qualify for it, you have to at least been at the place 12 months, have worked at least 1,250 hours, and work for an employer with at least 50 employees in a 75-mile radius. That's to qualify for the federal FMLA.
Now, some states, too small for that.
You are. And some states have different versions of it mm-hmm. that kind of increase the amount the employer's saying. But
well, yeah. I would still do it if it was legitimate, though. Yeah. I would let people off for it. I wouldn't want to pay them. That would hurt me. But.
And what is a movie called A Child's Wish?
A Child's Wish. That evidently had to do with the FMLA Act being passed, and it depicted Clinton signing the bill into law.
But do you know who it starred?
John Ritter.
That's right.
The late John Ritter.
I know. I was looking. I
see his son on TV now. Boy, his son sure looks like him.
I saw he passed away in 2003.
It's been a long time, I know. He was a young guy when he passed away.
I was thinking to myself, he passed away not too long ago.
No, it's been a while.
2003.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like I read an article today where they were talking about how when Wonder Years came out,
yeah,
it was talking about a period that was only like 15 years earlier.
Yeah.
That it was referring to as nostalgically and all this kind of stuff. So if you did that now, it'd be like you were depicting 2000 to 2005, and you don't think about that being the bygone days, you know?
Yeah. I've tried to explain this theory to you before in other episodes, and you just looked at me kind of vacantly.
That, yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing. My dad and I were talking about something the other day and said something about it happening in, 1982 or something like that. And then I think about that for a minute, and I was like, do you realize how many years ago that was when you think about it? Because to us, we were talking about it. It was like it was happening just the other day. It was 1982. Yeah. It wasn't that long ago. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
that was like 35 years ago or 30-something. I can't do the math.
I'm glad we can finally connect on this theory because it really bothered me because I tried to bring it up. I think if you go back through the different episodes we've had, I've probably tried to bring this up like 3 or 4 times. You've always looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I know.
Now we're finally connecting with it. So I feel like we've accomplished something today.
Well, that's because you're getting old like me.
No, it's not. I understood it first.
So you just had a birthday.
That's true.
You had a birthday since the last episode. That's, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. He's a New Year's Eve baby.
I am. Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. You actually aced this one. You must know your employment law.
Well, I have to, so I don't get
sued all the time.
I know, because you're constantly firing people.
That's right. When I fire them, by God, they stay fired.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is New Year resolutions. I don't know about you, but I hate New Year resolutions. They are so cliche. Everyone says, "What's your resolution for the new year?" But they are just asking so they can call you out about it when you fail. Don't get me wrong, the idea of a resolution is admirable, but it is kind of a false start for doing so. The most common thing seems to be dieting / exercising. Then you get into stopping bad habits like smoking or drinking or texting while driving. I mean, because those will or can kill you. So you can't go wrong with any of those. But here's the problem. January 1st is really just a random date. What if someone asked you, "Hey, what's your resolution for March 1st this year?" You would think they were crazy. It's a new year, so it should be a new you, right? I don't believe it works that way, and that's why I greatly dislike New Year resolutions. As a guy that works out in the Nautilus at my local Y 3 or 4 times a week, I see the place get filled up every January for about 2 or 3 weeks. It is always frustrating because there is this influx of new people that don't know how to use the machines, and they come in groups for moral support, so they clog up a machine for a while so that all 3 or 4 can take a whack at it. They block the machines and talk or sit on them and text or Facebook or whatever, but they're not working out. They are just there. Working out doesn't benefit you through osmosis. Just being in the vicinity of the machines for 45 minutes to an hour does not constitute a good workout, and you will see no benefits. That's why pretty much by the end of February, the gym is about back to normal, and we don't have the congestion problem anymore. The reason this holds true year after year is January 1st is a random date. Look, let's be honest, you eat too much and don't exercise because you like to eat, and exercise, when done properly, is not really fun. It hurts, especially the older you get. Bad habits like smoking, drinking, and texting while driving, you do because you like it, and you don't think you can function properly without it. So saying January 1st, I'll quit, rarely works because it is just a random date. For humans to institute a real change in their core being, it has to come from within, and for good reason. You hear about someone that quit smoking because they found out they were going to have a child. Suddenly, there was something more important than smoking, the life of their child and their own life so they could be there for them. A random date does not provide this impetus. For a real-life example, I had a drinking problem through my 20s and 30s, and while it caused some problems from time to time, I never had any desire to change, even though I made many promises not to get drunk and get out of line. Finally, after a New Year party we went to that I managed to embarrass myself and everyone else there and waking up behind the toilet, I said, "I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be this guy." So I gave up drinking the next day, which happened to be January 1st, but it was not a New Year resolution, and I got resentful when people asked if it was a New Year resolution because I think they are cliche and not real. I did it because I knew I needed to make a change, and the calendar had nothing to do with it. I didn't drink for 2 years, and then I felt like I had control over it because I found I could turn it off if I wanted to. Since starting back, I have never embarrassed myself or my family again, and I only drink things I enjoy, not to get drunk. I can say enough after two or three, whereas before, I went until the drinks ran out or I hit the floor. True change comes from within. The other thing is, we should all be working on ourselves to be better people all the time, not just one day a year. Would you call yourself a religious person if you only went to church on Christmas Day each year and that was it? Probably not. So to be a good human being, we should be motivated all throughout the year to fix something we identify as less than we want to be. If you do, you may be all out of things to improve on by January 1st. We are, by design, flawed creatures, all of us. We all should be working on fixing things we don't like about ourselves. Whenever we reach that point that we say, I don't like that about myself and I want it to change. It won't be overnight. You have to work at it and struggle with it, but in the end, you may find that it leads to other good things because the positivity you exude while trying to make a positive change to yourself is contagious to others. So don't feel bad if you don't have a resolution this new year, or if you have already failed in your resolution this new year, because January 1st is a random date. Find a change and be the change that you want to be, and make that happen when you discover it and want to make it. I mean, if you figured out in June that you were a jerk, why be one for six more months before you fix it? Quit being a jerk now. It will mean more to yourself and to others the sooner you quit being one. So don't be too hard on yourself if this year's resolutions don't work out. Just examine yourself and make the positive changes to yourself when you decide you are ready. Do it for you, not for others. If you are doing it for others, then you will surely fail. So be the change that you want to be, and don't worry what day it is. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.